And the great thing about this is if it does, great. And if it doesn't, that's fine too. But yeah. I have the flexibility as a solopreneur to say, I'm going to try to monetize this, or I'm going to try to monetize that, or I'm going to go do this thing that I'm not going to make any money at specifically because I want to.
Yeah.
And I choose.
I love it. Hi, Claire Sullivan. Welcome to the Corporate Escapee Podcast.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks for having me.
No, my pleasure. I'm super excited about this one. And if you've been listening to the podcast, this is a newer thing, but now I'm asking every single one of our guests when we get going is, when did you escape corporate and what made you finally do it?
Yeah. It's a great question. December 1st of 2023, a date that will live in infamy. I was working in a company in the hospitality industry, publicly traded company, and I was miserable. And I'd been trying to get out for months. The stress level was higher than I've ever experienced anywhere. And I mean, I've done work with the military. I have a PhD. I've been through stress. The culture there was, we'll just say, not great. And it got to the point where my health was really, really suffering as a result. I could no longer swallow solid food. That's how bad it was. Corporate quit on me on December 1st of 2023. I was like, I'd been trying to find a job for months because I was absolutely miserable there. And the job market, especially in tech, which is where I work, is just horrible right now. And it wasn't as bad in 2023, and it was still really bad. And speaking as a Gen Xer, where ageism is definitely a thing, it's not easy to find something right now. And it's only gotten harder since then. And I'd been talking to my husband for a couple months about it, saying, you know, I got to get out of this place. And maybe the thing to do is to start a business and just become a solopreneur. And so then that happened. And I was like, okay, well, I am the sole breadwinner for my family. We cannot go without me having a paycheck. So I found out that morning. I immediately went and got the whole articles of incorporation thing filed as an LLC within the state of Colorado where I live that day. I got an EIN number that day. I got everything registered with the state that day. So within less than 24 hours, I'd created an LLC. I went and I bought the domain, you know, set up the Google workspace, all of this stuff, got the email going. And on Monday, so, you know, a couple of days later, I went onto LinkedIn and I was like, hey, everybody, this is what I'm doing. I'm starting my own company. I'm going to be working in the areas of Gen AI, whether that's, you know, helping people code. So like doing freelance work or consulting work, education work, any of those things, reach out if you have a need. And by the end of the week, I'd replaced my corporate salary.
That's awesome. And just note to the listeners, that's not typical.
That's not normal. No, it is not normal. I am very fortunate.
But it does happen. And
it can.
And I do want to unpack this a little bit because there's some things you did that most people don't do, right? That they let their universe know that, hey, I'm doing this. Hello out there, which is super helpful. But let's go back to, did you have an actual plan? I knew you were unhappy and we had some parallels with our corporate quitting on us. I was unhappy. You were unhappy. I didn't have a plan when corporate quit on me. Did you actually have a vision or an idea or any plan at all when the notice came?
I did. And that's not actually how it panned out.
Of course. That's okay.
I was originally thinking that I would consult with companies on data culture. So I've seen a lot of companies do exactly the wrong things with running their data organizations.
Yeah.
And they make some pretty common mistakes. And I thought, you know what? I've seen these mistakes a million times. I can certainly come in and help on this. So I started setting up, doing some public speaking on that subject just to get the word out there. Hey, I'll help consult on this stuff. But I was also thinking, okay, well, you know, obviously Gen AI is a thing. With my technical background, it was in those directions. And so when people were reaching out to me, they were reaching out for Gen AI. And so I think the thing that I learned from that is you have to be fluid. You have to be adaptable. You have to go with what the clients want. And they all wanted Gen AI. So I was fortunately in a position where I could offer that type of service. So I went with that. I have yet to have a company want to work with me on data culture, which is unfortunate because so many companies do it
yes,
so poorly.
Large, small, anything. We'll get into it in a little bit because I think I'm curious about how you package some of these things. But I think, you know, the lesson there is absolutely, and again, I've learned from do as I say, not as I do sometimes, because when I when I left, I didn't tell anybody for like 2 years other than one-on-one conversations. And I had no intention of going back to corporate. So what the hell was I thinking by not just announcing it to my network that says, hey, I'm going solo, I'm doing these things. I just didn't know if I wasn't comfortable. I don't know what I was thinking. Now I tell people, right?
You know, I've talked to people about this, and I think that there at least used to be this perception of you go solo or you freelance when you can't do anything else. And there's actual published work out there right now that says that, I'm trying to remember the numbers correctly. I want to say it was like 2027, more than 50% of the U.S. workforce will be working independently. And that can mean a lot of things. That could be freelance, that could be gig economy, consultants, whatever. But more than 50%, that's the first time in history that that's going to be true. And so this perception of somehow, and I mean, people, I remember when I was in corporate and I would interview candidates who were doing the freelancing thing, and they would feel really sheepish about it. And I was like, no, this is a strength. If you're able to do that and you're able to make that work for you, that demonstrates a lot of skills that are beyond just what I'm interviewing for. So I really think that the tide is turning on that. But I do think that there are still people who are like, oh, geez, I'm going and working for myself. I'm starting this business. That must mean I'm a failure. No, it's quite the opposite, in fact.
Yeah. And it's such a good point. I want a couple of things I want to dig into there, because the first one was, a lot of the people, I had over 1,000 plus conversations now, and the amount of people that are not only questioning the confidence of going solo, but starting to question their ability within corporate, which just floors me because, again, if you've been in there for 4 years or four decades, you've got a ton of experience. And it's just, I think it is that culture that just beats you down and starts to get you questioning what you know or you don't know. But I think you're right. I think there was. And sometimes people that are, they get laid off unemployed and they just put either fractional on there, doesn't help the name because they're really not trying to be solo and building a business. And one of the names I've been pushing hard lately, at least with our audience, is more of a, I'll call it the escapee solopreneur, right? It's taking what you have in corporate, right? And then going, applying it as a solo business. You can then move in different ways, kind of like we'll get into your journey a little bit, but you've got the experience, go figure out how to make money, $1,000 at a time, start to stack it, then go. Where, you know, you read some of these that's, you know, get rich quick or, you know, reinvent yourself completely. I'm like, well, most of us have a financial component. Agreed. So, let's go back. And when that time came, I was mad, right? Not completely surprised when I had time to reflect, but then it was like, all right, it's go time. Got to go figure this out. What was your, I guess just because of the stress levels, you were ready to go solo? Were you nervous about doing this, excited? What were kind of the emotions you were going through?
I was terrified. Okay. I'll be honest. I was absolutely terrified. You know, I'd never been laid off before or fired before or anything before.
Okay.
It was the very first time. I'd always quit jobs. I'd never had them quit on me. And so, you know, the idea of the loss of a paycheck was, and, you know, the sole income in my family, you know, and that was the health insurance and that was the everything. And it was really, really scary. The fear is real. But I really was just terrified about the loss of income. And my husband and I, we sat down, we talked about it, and we agreed we would know after 3 months if this was going to work. And one of my other worries was, well, what if after 3 months, it's not entirely clear? And there was nothing saying I couldn't go out and apply for other jobs during that 3 month period. You know, you and I both know what the statistics are on that right now. Something like 1 in 4 jobs on LinkedIn is a ghost job. It's a ghost ad. They're not intending to hire.
And I mean, interrupted just to verify that, because I just found a stat yesterday. 0.4%, if you apply for a job, 0.4%, you get that job. Not 4%, 0.4%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane, the job markets. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
but,
it's true. And in tech, it's so bad right now. You know, everybody was told for decades, you want to have a solid career for your whole life, learn to code. I don't know that I could say that anymore. But, you know, when I look at what's happening in tech, and I've been speaking about this places, people on average who've been laid off from tech, are filling out more than 750 job applications. Yeah, that's insane. That doesn't scale. But the thing that bugs me about that, and I mean, you and I can talk to Lord Blue in the face about this, you know, just because a company lays off 10,000 people doesn't mean they have 10,000 people less work to do. They still have the work. They're just trying to alter their bottom line so the shareholders 100%. Will give the C-suite these bonuses because they cut costs. That's yep. all it is.
100%. Profits over people.
Yeah. But it's going to burn them. And I would be surprised if we're not already seeing that. You know, we've had some pretty major internet outages over the past month. Why? You know, people, they're not going to talk about it. You know, it behooves them to not talk about it. But, you know, how many of these outages are caused because they don't have enough people in there with eyes on screens looking at what's happening in the code base? Or, you know, there was the Cloudflare outage this summer that brought down the whole air travel industry, among other things. And this is completely rumor. I can't prove it's true. But, you know, it would just make sense that a few months prior, Cloudflare had laid off their Q&A team, who would have potentially caught. Exactly. I mean, you can't say, and they're certainly not going to say.
No,
but
heck no.
But they still have the work. It still has to be done. They may not have recognized it yet, but you can't, when you let go of 10,000 people, you don't just get to hire them all back instantaneously. Even if they got permission to do so, they still have to go through searches. It still takes time, and they still have work that needs to be done.
And I don't care how busy or not busy you were, 10,000 people, there's a lot of stuff that was getting done, to your point, every single day. And the best, a really good example in one of my more popular TikToks was the CEO of Spotify, after going through major layoffs, said it at the next earnings call. He was surprised the impact the layoffs had on their business. I'm like, no shit. What did you expect? I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, I mean, that just tells me, and you know it even more than I do, but I've seen the inside of the, I know how these internal companies work. They're siloed by operating budgets and money, and there's no way that they've incorporated integrated AI in these automation to make their businesses more efficient. There's just no way. There's no way. So to your point, all these layoffs have been purely money, profitability. Mm-hmm. Some point, maybe they'll figure it out, but I'm not 100% sure. It's like turning the Titanic on some of these big companies. So anyway,
Well, and then the flip side of it that I don't think, you know, people who are searching for jobs realize, you know, when I would post a job for the team that I was leading, I would post it and within a week I'd have over 3,000 applicants. And that it didn't matter what level I was posting for. I could be posting for a junior level or a senior level. And, you know, I'm not saying that they were all bad. There were a lot of really great applicants there. But, you know, as a human being, to try and weed through 3,000 applicants is really tough. You know, how are you as one person going to stand out among those 3,000? It's really, really hard.
And that's why I go back, and one of my taglines, it's easier to find your first customer than your next job.
It is so true.
And it doesn't seem like it, but then that's why I kind of asked you if you were nervous, fearful.
Very.
Especially if your entire career. So let's go back. All right. Uh-huh. It's now Monday. Uh-huh. You reached out and say, by the way, I 100% agree with you that data is the biggest issue that company, even if you want to automate, you got to get your data right. So whole different episode.
We could spend days on that one.
So what, because part of it is, all right, I want to go get clients. What did you do? What was kind of your process? Maybe what would you do differently? Maybe we can break down some of it, because I've got some ideas for folks thinking through this as well. But what was your process?
Yeah, my process was LinkedIn. And people, I'm going to say that's a double-edged sword. Some people can do really well in LinkedIn. Some people don't. And I was fortunate. One of the roles that I had in corporate before going solo was in developer relations. And so part of the job in DevRel is just getting content out there in as many places as possible. And I learned a lot of different things through working in DevRel about how to, there was this, I don't want to call it a flywheel because I think that term gets overused, but like, you post something one place and then you go and post it another place and then you go and post it another place and they all generate clicks and people are, you know, I came across this blog post, but that took me to her LinkedIn and that took me to, you know, Twitter or X or whatever. And, you know, it just kind of organically grows your network online. And so the very first place I went on Monday morning was onto LinkedIn. I had my webpage, I had my email. I said, hey, here's what I'm doing. I'm excited. Reach out. Okay. Yes, I said excited. I didn't say terrified, but I was terrified.
Middle both, right? Both.
Yeah. And so, you know, I got the usual, you know, emoji responses. Oh, good luck. You're going to do great at this, blah, blah, blah. But then I had somebody that I didn't know immediately reach out. And it was somebody who came across my DevRel content. It wasn't somebody I actually had a, you know, at the time, a personal relationship, but she became my first client. And she had immediate needs. It was a startup. And it sounded like fun. And I was like, yes. And she says, all right, well, let's get started after January 1st. Perfect. And then I had a second person reach out. And he was somebody I had worked with in the past, another startup. And he says, hey, I really want to go down this Gen AI path. I've got this idea. And I was like, great, let's do it. So, all right, let's get started after the first of the year. So that took some serious pressure off that I knew that I was going to have these two clients starting after.
Yeah.
Right. And I think one of the things that I did as a result of that, that I think was incredibly important, I was burnt out of my gourd. I couldn't swallow solid food. And so I used that time in December to just recover my body. I slept a lot. Like it was recovery. It was, you know, when you go through something really, you know, traumatic, and I would describe that job as incredibly traumatic, the most toxic environment I have ever been in. And when you go through that, you have to give yourself an opportunity to recover from it. So, you know, if you're somebody who's just been laid off, you know, that feel all the emotions, take the time to go through that. And yeah, I was very fortunate that I knew I was going to have something on the other side. But the other part, you know, the flip side to that is not burying yourself in it. You know, everybody's going to go through the different stages of grief through that process. And I did, and I'm sure you did. And what I tried to do was every day, every weekday, not doing weekends, not doing holidays, but every working weekday, I tried to do one thing for my business. And it could have been something that took 30 seconds. It could have been something that took 5 hours. But just every day, do the one thing. So you know you're driving towards making that thing successful.
Yeah, I have that. And I think, yeah, I mean, but to your point, part of it is getting yourself out there. But maybe we can even take that little step back. Because I know a lot of people get kind of stuck, or they want to pitch, right? In your idea, you're going to do data cleanup or data management. Mm-hmm. That really wasn't. These people approached you. And I love I'm a big believer in listen, right? What is the problem they have? And can I come up with a solution to solve it? We don't have to make it any more complicated than that, but we want to, right? You know, like, no, I'm only doing fractional. I'm only doing solo consulting. I'd be curious. Let's go back to the first conversation. The first person reached out. I'm guessing you got on a call, mm-hmm. right? And just maybe just share, obviously you don't have to give us the details. You're just kind of curious. One, did you have an idea of how this was going to work when it got started? Or did you truly just go in listening and say, hey, I think this is how we can do it?
Just went in with an open mind and listened to the problems that she had and what she was trying to create. And I said, yeah, I have some ideas on how you can create that. And here are the things that I can bring to the table for it. And here's the things that I can't, because I think that's just as important, is if you need somebody who's going to do this thing, I'm not your person. One of my personal brand things is honesty. So if I can't solve a problem for you, then I will tell you that. I'm not going to, you know, just sit here and waste your time and money on it. She legitimately had a thing that I definitely thought I could help with.
Okay.
And yeah, so we got started.
And did you, again, now I'm getting into a little of the tactical, because this hangs people up sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's, all right, I think I can help you. Then you just email her with a couple of options. And how did you think through, again, we're getting tactical, pricing, because again, this hangs up a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where to get started. So kind of how did you, and again, the other thing I tell people, it's okay if you get it wrong, right? Your first client,
You're going to get it wrong. So the pricing thing is interesting because, you know, part of one of the things that I did during that month of December was just get some books on how to get started as solo. And, you know, they'll tell you in these books, oh, you know, you want to go for people who are going to pay you like a monthly retainer. And yeah, that's great. I love that for you. Okay. But like all of my clients, they wanted hourly, which meant I needed to figure out what an hourly rate was. And this is something that I try to walk people through when I advise them, is even if you're working as in a retainer or on a per project basis or whatever, understanding what that means for you in an hourly rate. So I go through this exercise with people where I say, okay, what was your corporate salary? Now we're going to divide that by 2080 if you're in the United States, which is the number of working hours if you work 40 hours a week in the US. Okay, and that will tell you your hourly rate. Now, pro tip, have a have a drink or something ready for when you do this, because it's actually a really sad calculation. There are people who make very high, you know, what look like on paper, very high salaries. But when you sit down and figure out what that hourly rate is, it's really not that high at all. Okay. So then I started talking in my network about, you know, how much, if I was working for some contracting shop, I was a consultant in a contract shop, how much is that company taking off the top? From my network, it was roughly about a third.
Yeah, 20 to 30% makes sense.
Yeah. And so I said, okay, well, I know what I paid contractors to do this job when I was in my corporate role. You know, what's two thirds of that? That's what I'll charge. Like, I mean, it's really not a hard calculation.
Yeah, you had a baseline.
And so then I took that number and I took it to some people in my network and they're like, yeah, that's about right. You know, that number can go up and down depending on situations. You know, maybe there's somebody that you really, really want to work for, but they don't have the funding to afford that. You know, you can make the decision to give them a lower number, or
you can,
and this is something that I recommend. If you know that a client is going to be harder to get on board and you're going to have to do a lot more legwork for them, make that number higher. So you're eventually going to get paid for it.
Yeah. Can I bounce an idea off you?
I've been
playing with this formula. And I tell people this is not rocket science, but it's been oddly accurate compared to like what people are charging in the fractional and consulting. So what I tell people is take your salary, your annual salary, multiply it by 1.25 being benefits on average. Let's use $100,000 salary. So multiply 1.25, you're at 125,000, drop the three zeros. Your hourly rate's 125. So if you're making 250,000, drop the three zeros. And I think the higher you go, more especially, I think you can charge more than this. But I guarantee you my number is going to be higher than your number. But when it works out, right? Because again, the other thing, because what I try not to do is get it too complicated. So if you think back into your corporate role, you were probably doing what you were hired to do, what, 30% of the time on a good week, right? Maybe if that.
Was I hired to sit in meetings all day? I mean.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So when you go work with smaller companies, they're only paying you for the highly productive time. So if
that's
you
right.
scaled out all that other fluff and busy work and everything else that they made you do, then it becomes a realistic number. And doing this for long enough and talking with people long enough, it's a good starting point, right? Because everybody wants to undercharge what they can up front. And part of it is the market's going to tell you what they're going to pay for it. But anyway, so because I did go down the path that you were going, but I mean, I had heard this. And so if somebody's listening to this and knows exactly where the, you know, the birth of this mini calculator came from.
I don't know, but let me add on one little tidbit onto that one.
Yeah.
One of the best pieces of advice I was given, which was do not assume, okay, like you can come up with that hourly rate, you know, let's say it's $100 an hour, $150, $200, whatever. You can come up with that number, but you cannot assume that you will be billing for 40 hours a week.
The best,
I was given a rule of 60%. Assume that you will only be able to bill 60% of your time because you still have other things that you have to do to run the business that when you're not a solopreneur, you don't think about. You've got to do business development. You've got to, you know, do finances, like
content.
Yeah. And you're not getting paid for that stuff.
Right.
So you do need to include that in there. So when it comes right down to it, you want to take that number and see, you know, it's not exactly correct, but, you know, 25 hours a week. Can you live on 25 hours a week out of 40 hours a week at that hourly rate? And if the answer is yes, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's perfect because I think that's what, again, the data I'd seen from the collective, which you're a part of, but then also into like John Arms and his fractional community, what their hourly rate is and hours worked. That's what I was trying to think of. And then even just data on other solo consultants. And it is, people are replacing their income in between 20 and 25 hours per week. But to your point, it's not, there is other stuff that you need to do, but it's realistic to be able to do that. And I just don't think people they get so caught up on some of the little stuff, the fear stuff before we even get to the.
Yeah. Don't overthink it. Really don't overthink it.
Keep it simple. That's for sure.
The hardest part is just like the first few times you have that conversation and they say, what's your hourly rate? Practice that in the mirror, practice it with a friend or a loved one. Just, you got to get comfortable. It's really hard the first few times you tell people my hourly rate is X.
Yeah.
But it does come. It does get easier every time you do it.
And again, I think too, the other thing that I've found with folks is shifting it from sales to problem solving. I can help you. This woman, your first client had a problem. You're like, yep, I can solve it. And again, the way I recommend is there's three ways, right? We can do it super simple. I can work with you a couple hours a month just to be your sounding board. Mm-hmm. We can go a little bit deeper, right? Maybe 10 hours somewhere in that, because it does come back to hourly, even whether it's retained or not, it's still hourly.
Right.
And then all the way to, hey, bring me on full time, right? As a fractional, 8 to 10 hours per week. I always like that good, better, best, because they almost always pick the middle option, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you develop the relationship, maybe they pull you in for even more. Mm-hmm. That there's too many folks that are just holding out for the, you know, use the sports analogy, the home run, right? They want, and I was guilty of it in my early days. That's
absolutely
all I was looking for, was the home runs. And I left a lot of money on the table doing that. So,
you know, and I think, you know, one of the things that I've learned from the corporate escapees is that I have left money on the table. And you know what? It's okay. You're going to do it. As you get more and more experience in, you know, working solo, you start leaving less and less on the table. And then you really start, and I'm not going to say that I'm to this point yet, but I've seen it with other of the escapees, you know, then they really start getting that traction and they're not leaving the money on the table. They're doing real well. But it takes some, you know, give yourself the patience and the grace to take the time and learn how to do it.
Yeah. And the other thing too, I found, because I made the assumption when I left, I'm like, I just want to make more money, 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 money. But then, you know, time, I'm like, God, I like having this free time. This is nice. Wait, my health's actually getting better. You talked about health. All of a sudden, this was this balance, and money's still important. It is. We all have different needs and goals, but that's kind of what I found the beauty of the escapee world is, mm-hmm. you can build it to what you need.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to build a Google or a Facebook or, you know, a growing agency. You can basically, it's shared, the one, I don't know if you ever watched Point Break, the old original Patrick's. No. They were surfers that were bank robbers, and they only robbed like 3 banks a year to fund their off season in Australia.
There you go.
So I'm like, that's what escape. We're funding our lifestyle, right? And making it predictable.
So it's really funny you mentioned that, because like my goal was just replace my corporate salary, because again, that was my fear, was losing the corporate salary. Okay. So we did that. And then it was like, okay, well, I am doing that working 20 to 25 hours a week. Billing 20 to 25 hours a week. It doesn't mean I'm not working more, but you know, I live, for those of your listeners who don't know this, I live in a resort town in the Colorado Rockies. I love to ski, and I wasn't skiing. I'm like, I'm working for myself. Why am I not skiing more? You know, why am I not getting out there? And so then I just had this wild hair last spring. We've got this great regional professional theater here, and I used to love doing theater. I did it professional theater when I was in high school, hadn't done it in 32 years. Like it had literally been that long. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to audition for a show. And they happened to be doing Young Frankenstein, Mel Brooks musical. And I'm like, I'm just going to audition and see what happens. And I got cast as Frau Blücher. Okay. But
that's
we
so
were
cool.
Rehearsing 6, 7, 8 hours a night, 6 nights a week. Okay. There is no way I could have done that working in corporate. We were rehearsing from like 3 till 10, Monday through Saturday. Like, something like that. There's absolutely no way I could have done that working in corporate. And, you know, when I look back on that, it was one of the most transformative experiences of my adult life, was doing that show again. So I, you know, what did I give up by spending 32 years of, you know, of course you have to work 9 to 5. You're not successful if you don't work 9 to 5. So.
Yeah, no, I love that story.
Okay.
That's what's so cool about the escapee. It's just, you're starting to find, you know, I love another line from a movie, you know, from Shawshank, get busy dying or get busy living. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, and I don't know if you and I have talked about this, but, you know, when I started this, it was really heavily focused on Gen X, but picked up other folks that weren't. But what I've found through this journey is some Gen Xers just aren't ready to go. You can lead them to water. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go. But I've found 20 somethings, 30 somethings, 40 somethings at all different ages that just knew corporate wasn't for them. It was broken and didn't see a path forward. But yet they found a path forward in doing a lot of the things that we've been talking about. So I think, you know, one of my, I don't want to call it regrets. Regrets is a strong word, but, you know, I would have figured this out 10 years earlier, but maybe we weren't in a marketplace or a world where it made that much sense. But now we're there.
Everybody, if you think about what the job market was 10 years ago, it's so different. And everybody comes there on their own time. And I don't want to regret it, because every job that I had and every experience that I had taught me something that I can, you know, absolutely use today in my solopreneur journey. But, you know, some people, they just, you know, they learn those things about themselves at different times. And you know, I'm happy for the people that it happens younger in life with. You know, they get to have more of their life back. For me, losing that much time, that I look at my kid who's 14 and, you know, almost 15, and I lost major portions of her childhood for work. And why? Those places, they didn't care about me. Like, I was just another spoke in the wheel.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I think is a sign, and a lot of people don't realize it, of a really toxic work environment is when they say we're all a family here. It's like, no, I actually have a family, and family treat each other in certain ways, and it ain't this.
Yeah, no, 100%. And again, I love the even small business owners will say, well, the small, everybody will want to work and work as hard as I'm like, no, they don't. Unless they own a piece of the company, they're not going to care as much as you, nor should they, right? This, again, I viewed it for too long, chasing promotions and just the way it was, I thought it was supposed to be. And when you think back about how much you built your life around that job, in my case, I was laid off a few times, so I more, little more numb than you were when it happened. But, you know, just in hindsight, there is, if you have alternatives to do it, and it just, the sooner the better. But again, you have to be ready. And the beauty of it, like you said, you gave it, you were going to give it 3 months. It took you a week to figure out if it's going to work. But even 3 months or 4 months, the risk is so low that you can go back or try to go back. The thing I don't understand is the folks that have been laid off that are afraid to try this, because what do you have to lose, right? There is no downside to testing. You're doing the same work. You're just having to do a few different things, which I understand, but the trade-off is, I don't know, that's the gospel I'm trying to preach, is just try it.
Well, and the thing is, it's not all or nothing. Like, right. You can be trying it while you're also filling out those 750 plus job applications. There's nothing saying you can't do both. You know, I really think, you know, if I had gotten to design it, you know, if corporate didn't quit on me, it would have been a lot better if I could have set it up as a side hustle that I eventually grew out and then could eventually just leave of my own volition. That would have been great. Life didn't work out that way. Okay, fine. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I will, you know, give up my family's income and the house and the kids' college fund or whatever, you know, because corporate is a toxic mess right now.
And again, if it works for you, then you're probably not listening to this podcast anyway. So, but yeah, and I think that the thing I would have had was a plan in place to figure out. The other thing that I learned, and which I'm trying to share now, is over the 5 years that I did start hardcore solo consulting. Then I started hardcore fractional. Then started to figure out how to monetize a bunch of different ways, and it took me down a new path. And that's what I'm finding with, you know, whatever we define successful escapee, is there's multiple revenue streams still tied back to their experience, either personal or professional. And sometimes I think if we just take it to that least common denominator, maybe a mini service that you can charge, maybe it's a one-time thing or a monthly subscription, I still think is the path. And I was going to say, I know you've gone down this path because you launched a training program. So kind of share your 2 year journey, how it's evolved in the time since you've been out.
Yeah, well, I think it's really important what you just said about monetizing a bunch of different things, because we're taught in corporate life, you know, this is how the business makes money, the end. You know, we have these offerings, we have this catalog, we charge these things. And there's no flexibility there. It's a very rigid structure. Whereas when you're running your own business, work on what you want, charge what you want, you know. Good on you if you can get somebody to pay for it. What I have learned over the past 2 years is the things that I, you know, when I give people my elevator pitch, I say, you know, what I do is I provide consulting, freelancing, and educational services in the Gen AI domain. Okay. But what does that really mean? I mean, it means I could do basically anything I want. And throughout the course of the past 2 years, one of the things that I really rediscovered was a love of teaching. And I've taught several times in several different capacities before. I was a university professor for a little while. When I was in grad school, I taught dance for a while. So I've always enjoyed teaching. And it turned out that I had some clients who wanted to pay me to teach classes in Gen AI. And it just really reminded me how much I loved teaching. And so what I decided to do was let's see if we can find a way to do this more. So I have started on the platform maven.com, and they do a lot of online classes for things like Gen AI. It's kind of a saturated space there. But one of the things, they have a lot of tech people there, but they don't have a lot of, they do have a career section, but it's you know, how to land your next promotion, how to speak with an executive presence, these kind of things. And those are all great and useful, but nobody was teaching a solopreneur class, how to layoff proof your career as a tech worker by becoming a solopreneur. So I said, you know what, I'm going to offer that. Let's see what happens. And so a couple weeks ago, I did my first free 30-minute class, and I had over 100 people sign up. And I have another one coming up this Monday, December 1st. If you go to Maven and you just search solopreneur, you'll come up with my full-time class. So now I'm actually going to be offering a full 2-week, 8-hour completely live interactive course on how to start a solopreneur business. And we'll see if that takes off. And the great thing about this is if it does, great. And if it doesn't, that's fine too. But yeah. I have the flexibility as a solopreneur to say, I'm going to try to monetize this, or I'm going to try to monetize that, or I'm going to go do this thing that I'm not going to make any money at specifically because I want to.
Yeah.
And I choose.
I love it. And again, it's one of the things I've seen is a lot of people move into the teaching, I love the way you position that with the educational services. It's exactly what we do. And it uh-huh. makes sense. And you can do it on your own time. And we will I'll have the link up at the top in the show notes for that class for the folks that want to check it out. And again, I think it's one, your story is inspiring. The fact is, yeah, you hit the jackpot early, which is awesome.
But it's very fortunate.
It doesn't always work that way. But unless you put yourself out there, you're not going to know if it's mm-hmm. going to work that way. And
that's right.
So give yourself the biggest, best chance to do it. And maybe one last thing I'll talk about, because you said, as long as you're putting out, you know, applying to 750 jobs, same thing goes when you're networking, right?
Uh-huh.
You have the conversation I called the dual path, right? So if you're talking to somebody, the perfect example was he's not in the community anymore. He ended up going back full time, but he was a former CMO having conversations, and he had just mentioned to somebody he was networking with that he's open to freelance or part-time. Like, oh, I didn't realize that. He ended up getting, I don't think they called it a fractional CMO role, but he filled that gap for a couple of folks, and all because in his networking call, he said, I'm open to part-time work. And now he ended up getting hired back full-time in a company mm-hmm. that he loves. It's small. So, but my only point is,
perfect.
Yes, just be open, be flexible, listen to where the problems are. And
that's right.
Yeah, no. So Claire, thank you so much for sharing your journey. It's awesome.
Thanks for having me.
And I know you're just getting started with this and sharing the personal piece, right, too, because it is getting out and doing things that you can't mm-hmm. do when you're in corporate. So awesome. Congrats on the early success.
And thank you.
We'll keep you. Like I said, I'm trying to bring back folks just to keep sharing their journeys they go through. So anything exciting that happens to you, let us know, and we'll bring
Love
you back
to.
On.
Love to.
All right. Thanks, Claire. Have a good rest
thank
of your
you.
Day.
You too.